I am J.A. Lovelock, a barrister and an author, but most importantly, a crime junkie. Welcome to my podcast, Behind the Yellow Tape. In this episode of Behind the Yellow Tape, I meet Anis and Lisa, who tells me about their relationship with the criminal justice system and how they got involved with it. They also talk about the effect it had on them and how they took advantage of their second chances.
I'm an ex-offender. I received an 8-year prison sentence for drug importation in 2000. I was released on parole in 2004. I was, as a parolee, I should have had the required support, especially with regards to my accommodation. It wasn't checked on. Upon release, I found out that it wasn't fit for a dog to live in. I stood in Margate on the 15th of December 2004 with a bag in my hand, thinking, what am I going to do now? If I'd gone back to probation and said, well, you know, my accommodation isn't fit, I could have been in breach of my licence, and I was worried about being recalled, especially as I hadn't committed a further offence. So I just remember standing there thinking, this isn't going to happen to somebody else. I mean, if this happens to a parolee, you know, goodness knows what happens to people that are not on parole, that are on that revolving door, what we call bed and breakfast people.
But how did you come by in setting up Vision Housing?
Well, again, like many others, the difficulties were finding organisations that could assist you. I was more fortunate because of the Vision Project at HMP Sutton Park. I'm working in the resettlement field as a serving prisoner. I was fortunate enough to know that there were organisations out here. You just had to find them. So I went along and badgered my job centre and said, you know, I'm here, I need help, what can you do? Nothing came forward. And then there was a lady there, Elaine, in Kingston Job Centre. She told me that there was an organisation called EcoActive Services. So I became a client of theirs on a progress to work, but it took me a long time to find them. Then after the first interview with them, they asked me to become a volunteer. And then the managing director, Amanda, put me up for some funding, and it was £1,000 to cover the whole of London for a year to house people.
So it sounds as if somebody actually gave you that challenge.
Yes, it was a challenge. It was, it was a maximum of £1,000. It was basically Home Office money.
So why did they choose you?
Well, it wasn't. I was put forward by the managing director of EcoActive Services. She felt that I deserved a better chance.
Oh, so was it for yourself to improve your own situation?
No, to set up Vision Housing. Set it up. Initially it was £1,000. I was awarded £1,500. And condition of that £1,500 was I took on a volunteer and trained her up in the work that I did.
They obviously saw something in you that could bring about some change. I mean, that is fantastic.
Yes, it was. I came out very, very excited. Lunchtime, I must admit, I did come out and call Amanda. And so I can't do this because now my mission statement was being born through the because it was all run through the Central Public Innovations, and they supported me in the beginning. And it was, as I said, it was a maximum of £1,000. They gave me £1,500. I was absolutely ecstatic, you know, but that was to last for a year, which obviously wasn't. But what a challenge. And I took that challenge.
Somewhere before all this happened, you must have expressed some interest or some desire to see the need of ex-offenders' needs being put right.
Yes, it was when you're doing a long prison sentence. You know, the amount of people you see constantly coming back in and out. You know, in the space of 3 months, 6 months, and when, if you ask them why, what's going on, it's always root is accommodation. Lack of accommodation. I mean, we used to try and do our best within the prison to ascertain, you know, housing for women that was being released. But it just doesn't work, you know. So I just wanted to do something. I just wanted to target the private sector. I knew that if I targeted them, it would be a success.
So when you say it doesn't work, does it mean that it really needed someone on the outside to receive them when they come out, as opposed to working from the inside?
Yes, well, that, but so many, you know, how there's been resettlement projects around for a very, very long time. Some do absolutely fantastic work. But one thing they don't do is put, you know, give people that's on that revolving door a chance, and that is suitable, sustainable accommodation on the day of release. Now, they are able to obtain a bed and breakfast for 48 hours, but then what happens? And that is a big concern, and it's a big concern for us now that organisations are still using this. But at the end of the year, they're able to tick the right boxes because they've actually given accommodation on the day of release, which is wrong.
So how many, shall we call them service users? Service users do you see and hopefully meet their needs?
We've housed to date 196. It's just slightly over now because obviously my team manage the office for me now. So it's 196. According to our database, we have a 10% reoffending rate. National stats is between 50 and 75%. So I have been cheeky enough to ask the National Offenders Management Service to help us with an evaluation, and hopefully we can't afford it, but we're waiting at the moment because we've had to ask for a favour. So as soon as that's done, we'll know the full, but according to our stats, it's 10%.
So how does this actually work in reality? I mean, someone's just been released from prison. What's next step? What happens next?
Okay, well, it's no good just housing them and saying, well, okay, you have a roof, you know, off you go. Wrong move. You then have to work with them and find out what they want. What do they want? Not what statutory bodies say this is what you must do, but what do they want? Because if you push people into employment just for the sake of it, it's not going to last. So it's a matter of finding out what they really want. What do they really want to do? And we refer, obviously, EcoActive is one of my partners. We do have a partnership. And EcoActive, obviously, Progress to Work for further education, training and employment. So we refer them on.
Are the service users referred to you, or do they just sort of turn up on your door sort of at the dead of night knocking on your door for help?
They have done. A lot of them, they're referred to us. I mean, for 2 years, as a social enterprise, we could not charge for our service. I was being blocked in every single way. Every time I turned, I was being blocked. Now, you know, we have proved ourselves. We're an award-winning service, and organisations now pay us, from the Metropolitan Police to, I mean, and they are my biggest supporters. I must admit, the response I had from Merton, the PPO team, which is Persistent Prolific Offenders team, the support I had from the Metropolitan Police there has been unreal. And they were actually the ones I thought would give me a hard time.
Well, I was going to say, that's quite ironic, really.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Because I remember that, you know, when we first received a cheque and it had the Metropolitan Police song, it was quite an achievement. And I did telephone one of the officers and say, I told you to pay me one day. And we laugh about it, you know. But yes, to have them supporting us for the benefit of the people that we work with has been unbelievable.
How did the name Vision Housing come about?
Well, Vision Housing, well, it was actually the Vision Project at HMP East Sutton Park, and I wanted to keep the name because amongst the offender circles, the female, Vision was well known. So I just added Project to Vision Housing, and that's what we do. That's all we do. I'm saying that it is a lot. There's a lot more than just, you know, we have to obtain landlords, we have to get them to waiver deposits, make sure all correct benefits are up in place. I mean, there's a lot of work. It just seemed right, Vision Housing. But I don't actually believe that it states what we actually do, because we just look like another housing service, and we do so much more.
I'm sure you do. Now, do you cater for both male and female, or is it just a single gender?
Male and female, yes. So it's across the board. We currently cover the whole of South London, and we have a fantastic database of private landlords who work with us. And we have, I think it was 8, 9, if not more, one-bedroom properties. So we could house people out of prison into one-bedroom self-contained flat.
How do you acquire these properties?
Well, it's a matter of knocking on the doors of the landlords. I don't believe in any of my team sitting behind a desk trying to find accommodation. The only way to find accommodation is get on your feet and walk. That's the best way. That's how I found all our landlords to date. They're what you call below the wire landlords. They're social landlords. They don't just rent out their property for a year and then when the year's up, they want to sell it. They want you out. This is their business. So, yes, they are making money, but that's their business, and we want their accommodation. And they waiver the deposits for us because people coming out don't have a month's rent in advance and a deposit. And then if you go to an estate agent, up to £250 for them to fill in a bit of paper for you. I mean, it's ridiculous. That's what we target, and our landlords are great with us.
Now, I started off by saying it's a low-level ex-offenders mm-hmm. that you cater for.
Yes.
Is there any particular ex-offender that you wouldn't accept on the project?
Yes, unfortunately, yes. We do not house MAPA clients, which is Multi-Agency Public Protection Agreement, I think. I always get stuck on the A.
Yeah.
You know, because they do need specialist support and we're actually not geared up for that. The others is obviously Schedule 1s and sex offenders. It would be impossible for us to place these securely within the community. We're not geared up for that support. And arsonists. And seriously violent offenders is also on our referral criteria. Albeit, I like to meet the clients myself, and everybody is judged on their own merit.
How many staff do you have working at the fishing project?
Six. I have a team of six now. All doing well.
And I do believe that they are also ex-offenders?
Oh, yes, some of them. Yes, some of them. They're not all like ex-offenders. The ex-offenders that are currently working with us, I contacted South London Learning Consortium. They come in, we put them on MVQs. I don't want them to just do voluntary work for me. It's about gaining a qualification in order for them to progress, either whether after the end of the course they gain employment with us or whether they go on. Either way, you know, the fact is they've got that qualification.
So as well as having somewhere to live, they can also find employment with Vision Housing.
Oh, yes. I think it's great to have service user involvement. I'm very hot on service user involvement. But, you know, I've got to be careful that, you know, not all my staff are looked at as ex-offenders because they're not all ex-offenders. We've got a good, strong team. I'm now, as I said, moving over to North London to set up the team there, albeit we are already housing there.
I've been employed by Vision Housing now for approximately 2 months. My role is operations manager. I initially came in as a volunteer, which lasted a month, after which my role was reviewed and I was offered and given the opportunity to take up the role as operations manager. Primarily, what Vision Housing does is will not only just house ex-offenders, but it also gives a lot of support to ex-offenders in terms of rehabilitation, employment, training, etc. So it's not a matter of just housing them, it's supporting them all the way through and working with them to improve their needs as they move on.
Are you able to tell us a bit about your own background, your own experience and how you come in contact with Vision Housing in the first place?
Yeah, sure. As I said, and as you're aware, Vision Housing works with ex-offenders. I am an ex-offender. My background is HR, human resources. I worked for the same organisation for almost 17 years. I made a mistake during that period. I mean, we all make mistakes. And as a result, I have a criminal record. Now, whilst I was serving my sentence, when I was due to be released, I was referred to Vision Housing. And I got in contact with Anise. It was just a matter of me picking up the phone and contacting Vision Housing. It just so happened that Anise answered the phone. I explained who I was, what my background was, and she invited me in for an interview the next day. Upon meeting her, she said, most definitely there's something she can do for me in terms of employment. So I have seen the other side of Vision Housing, whereby primarily their role is to house ex-offenders. I didn't have a housing requirement, but I had a need for employment, and Anise and Vision Housing obviously saw my skills, my background, regardless of my criminal record, and I guess utilising them now.
If you weren't here, where would you be and what would you be doing?
I would still be unemployed, at this stage. If Vision Housing, or if I didn't pick up the phone to Vision Housing and speak to Anise, I would still be unemployed.
Why would you be?
Because there are so many stigmas, you know, attached to someone that has a criminal record. Although I do have a strong background in employment and in HR, it's difficult to actually gain employment, particularly as there's, you know, the recession going on. There's millions of people unemployed. I think without the assistance or without Vision Housing actually identifying my key skills and experience and wanting to utilise those skills, I would still be unemployed if it wasn't for Vision Housing.
And how has it changed your life?
It has changed my life considerably. As I said, you know, I made a mistake in my life. It was a great knock to myself, to my family. It knocked my confidence. But coming in and working alongside Anise has, I've regained my confidence, and I'm doing what I do best, and that's working with people. You know, I guess my HR background for 17 years, I mean, HR is working with people. Vision Housing is all about people. So I'm doing what I do best.
Vision Housing has been very successful because, as you mentioned earlier, you won an award towards the end of last year. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, we've won a couple of awards. We were shortlisted. The first year I applied for the Andy Ludlow Homeless Award, and they kind of, not being rude, but they sort of poo-pawed us out of the running, which was acceptable because we hadn't been going very long. And at that time, the office was still the back of my car. You know, because initially it was about a mobile phone, the back of a car, and £59 a week, which is what I set up on. We were then shortlisted. With the following year, we applied again for the Andy Ludlow Homeless Award, and we came third. I won Social Entrepreneur Year Award in 2008, and I mean, we've just put forward again for the Social Justice Award, so we're waiting on the outcome of that.
Anise, what you have done, it seems to be a great achievement. You have achieved an awful lot, and I was just thinking, it seems really strange to think it, but do you think you would have achieved what you have achieved if you hadn't been inside?
No, I don't think I would have. I don't say that prison changed me, but what I would do is say prison saved my life, and the length of my sentence allowed me time to find myself again because of what I was involved in outside. It didn't change me. It just gave me the opportunity to find myself and work out where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do.
The phrase comes to mind of being a model prisoner, because it sounds to me that you were quite involved even where you were inside doing your time. You didn't just do your time. You got quite involved and tried to help other people as well as yourself. Were you a model prisoner?
Well, what is a model prisoner? You know, if it's kind of, well, I suppose in one way, yes. But, you know, I didn't have a problem with arguing with a member of staff either. So, yeah, I mean, I think I only ever had one or two adjudications whilst I was in. But then who doesn't? But, yeah, I suppose. I don't like to say model prisoner, really. I was just a prisoner, you know. Yeah, willing to argue and stand up for anybody at any time.
Well, a prisoner who worked very hard on behalf of others.
Well, yes, that was kind of in my nature, you know. I sound like a right wuss now, but if I'm able to assist and you know, somebody needs our help, then somebody should be there for them. You know, it's been too long since people have been coming out of prison, going to the council, they're deemed single homeless non-priority, and then left to their own devices. So even if they have worked hard in prison and want a chance, the fact that they have to go back to what they know because they're not given any help is huge, because they say, okay, they need a bed to sleep in, and they'll go and ask a friend, you know, start sofa surfing, back onto drugs, back in prison.
That's right, the whole cycle begins all over again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what Vision Housing is here for, to assist in reducing the risk. We can't stop offending. I mean, goodness, no, you know, we're not that good. But what we can do and what we do is reduce the risk of reoffending.
Thanks for listening. I am J.A. Lovelock. Join us next time as we go behind the yellow tape and catch up with more episodes at btytpodcast.com.
True terrors of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. On our podcast, Disturbed, Terror Takes Center Stage. Each episode is a journey into the darkest corners of human existence, delving into bone-chilling tales of kidnappings, serial killers, maniacs, and the very essence of your worst nightmares coming to life on this weekly true horror show. Disturbed is not for the faint of heart. It's an exploration of real, unadulterated horror sourced from everyday people. Each episode is a descent into the macabre, where we narrate stories that will leave you on the edge of your seat and crawling in your skin. We navigate the disturbing narratives that lurk in the shadows, offering a raw and unfiltered listen into the most terrifying aspects of the human experience. Enter at your own risk and let the unsettling tales unfold in the haunting realm of Disturbed. And remember, listeners, stay safe out there.